Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I'm so excited that you said good morning back. You have more energy than I do. My name is Nadia. I'm an activist with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And I'm very excited to be here this morning and talk to you about what to do if the police want to search your electronic device. I work on surveillance, both at the federal level, but also at the local level, and I give surveillance self-defense trainings. In my non-EFF life, I do legal support work, and I have given many, many Know Your Rights trainings. So excited to be doing that here. I'm gonna pass it to my friends up here with me so they can introduce themselves, and then we will get started. And if, I know if you've been here before, you probably have heard our introductions before, but for folks who haven't, go ahead.
Oh, my name is Blair Gentella. I'm an attorney here in Georgia. I practice in the Atlanta metro area as well as other parts. I focus on copyright law as well as I'm a general practitioner and handle search and seizure cases as well. And yeah.
And my name is Andrew Greenberg. I used to be on the board of Georgia Normal for a number of years, and in fact, glad to see a number of folks who are here at the legalization and medical cannabis reform panel from Friday. I also do a lot of trainings on know your rights, protect your rights, that sort of thing. I focus more on the basics of law rather than specifics of electronic law, but that's certainly been a growing concern in general, especially in the panel we do tonight on rules of dealing with police encounters. So if you have more questions about dealing with police, come to that one. And everyone in here knows idiot friends who need to be at that 10 p.m. panel. And the official name of it is 10 Rules for Dealing with Police Encounters, right back here. You got idiot friends who need to be here, so tell them to be here then.
And be here early because it's always packed for some reason.
for some reason. So that being said, you are going to get, I wanted to give you just a little bit of basics before we go into specifics about electronic devices, and then we're going to have lots of time for Q&A, and if you don't have questions, then I'm sure we'll be able to talk anyway. So I just wanted to give you one really important basic for dealing with police on the street. Mention a couple of rules specific to electronic devices, and then I'll pass it on to my fellow panelists. So the one basic tip that I think everybody needs to know is when you are dealing with law enforcement on the street. So when you're dealing with law enforcement on the street, there are three types of stops that you are going to encounter. One is just a totally voluntary stop. One is a brief detention for investigation, and one is an arrest. You're actually being taken, or a detention where you're actually being taken to the police department, you're being arrested, you can't leave. So the reason I bring this up is because if you are ever stopped by a law enforcement officer and you don't feel like talking to them, which is usually what I would recommend, you always have the right to say, "Officer, am I free to leave?" This is really important because, and I think this is going to come up over and over again as we talk, what do you guys think the number one way that people's devices get searched is? Consent to search. That is right. Really, the number one way that most things happen with law enforcement in the very early stages is that somebody agrees to it. It makes sense. You think if you agree, you're going to get in less trouble. It's maybe going to be a little bit less work. But that's definitely not what you want to do. So there are two magic phrases that I always like to make folks repeat with me when I'm doing these trainings. Can anybody guess what the magic phrases are?
Woo-hoo.
Officer, I do not consent to searches.
And I like to amend that. I do not consent to any searches.
Any searches. Man, it is good to be specific. So that's one of them. What's the other one? Am I free to go is definitely important. But this is like, regardless of whatever's happening, if you think you might be in trouble, what's the other? So you don't want them to search your devices. What else don't you want to do?
Yeah, we've seen how effective that is.
You definitely don't want them to do that. So the other is... And this is just a general... This is just a general tip. I do not consent to a search. The other one is, I'm going to remain silent. I want to speak to an attorney. So those are the two phrases that I think it's very important to know.
And I want to reiterate that because you actually have to affirmatively present the defense that you're going to shut up. You have to say, you have to verbalize or present to them that you're going to be quiet. You can't just be quiet.
That's right.
And once you say that, they're not supposed to interrogate you any further. But if you break your silence and you start talking again, then they're just going to sit there and listen to everything.
And I will say all the tips that we are going to give you depend on what's known as the exclusionary rule. I sorry to anybody who's a lawyer in the room. I'm sorry for multiple reasons. I'm a lawyer, too. But the exclusionary rule means that any evidence that law enforcement gathers in violation of the Constitution, a defense attorney would then have a reason to say this can't be used in a case against me. So the exclusionary rule is a remedy after the fact. And actually, I should have said this the first thing. Every tip that we're going to give you is going to be about the law, but it's also going to be about sort of practical tips you can take to take care of yourself, because of course, law enforcement officers don't always follow the Constitution. That's how we end up with such a rich body of constitutional law. Most of it comes actually from criminal cases where a defense attorney said, hey, that's not constitutional. So a lot of this will matter after the fact. And what you're doing is, you know, building a case for yourself to have your defense attorney be able to argue it later. So I just wanted to give you two specific electronic device tips to know, and then I'm going to open it up. So first of all, it's important to know, how many people here have heard of the case Riley versus California? Great. Well, I'm going to tell you guys about it. We were really excited to see this decision. Riley versus California is a decision that said that when you're arrested, if you have a cell phone on you, in the past, law enforcement used to say that they could check your cell phone and look at your text messages, look at your contacts, and they could do that as a routine part of arrest. So sort of dialing back for a second, under the Fourth Amendment, you're supposed to not do unreasonable searches and seizures. Court has basically interpreted that for the most part to mean a warrant, but there are all these exceptions, lots of exceptions. And this exception that I'm talking about, actually, if you want to maybe explain search incident to arrest.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, a search incident to arrest is an exception to the warrant requirement where when a person has been arrested, the officer can search the person in the area of their immediate control. And originally, it was defined really broadly. In one case, the defense challenged the search of an entire house when a person was arrested in their house, and found that to be unconstitutional. So over time, initially it was just, you know, basically anything when somebody was arrested, and it's been sort of restricted to a the area within their immediate control. And not only that, the purpose of this search is for the protection of the officers, and as well as to prevent the destruction of evidence. And this new decision, Riley versus California, is really fascinating because the court applied this test to the search of cell phones, so which may or may not implicate some of the same considerations.
So to boil it down, the great thing about the decision is that the court said, look, you can do a search incident to arrest because evidence might be destroyed or for officer safety. What's on a cell phone is not a matter of either of those things. And so the court said that basically, in most situations, law enforcement has to get a warrant to search your cell phone, even if you've been arrested. So they have to get a separate warrant. This was a great decision. We were really excited to see it. So that's the first thing you need to know. Law enforcement, when they arrest you, if they arrest you, not when they arrest you, I hope. if they arrest you and they take your cell phone, they can't just start scrolling through and looking at your text messages and all of that. Yep.
Well, let's get the box out for the question so they can record.
Yeah. Who was it? Yeah. If you want to repeat your question.
That decision was in California. How does it become applicable to us in Georgia?
Yep, that is a great question. So that's a Supreme Court decision. It started off, as I was saying, right, lots of this constitutional law is created through criminal cases. So there's a case that started off in California, and they appealed it all the way up to the Supreme Court. So once the Supreme Court has made a decision about the Constitution, that is the law of the land.
Some state courts before then had held, there was a split in the circuits, basically. So some states had held that it was constitutional to do that, and other states held that it was not. Under the federal Constitution, And then the state constitutions can be a separate source of people's rights. So the federal constitution, the Supreme Court will say, okay, it's not guaranteed under the federal, but then states are permitted to afford greater protections to their citizens under their states. So there's a split, but for federal constitutional purposes, that's what this case addressed, which is huge. So
yeah, so this case is now the floor. Some states do have better laws in place. So I think that's the most important thing to know, just in terms of sort of encounters on the street. The other really important thing to know, and we will, when we get into the Q&A, if anybody wants to know about sort of dealing with law enforcement when they show up at your door, I will happily answer those questions. But the other really important thing to know is how many people here have any sort of lock on their phone? Okay, I'm happy that most of the people in the room do. If you don't, you should have one for a variety of reasons. When it comes to dealing with law enforcement, number one reason is if you lose your phone, you don't want whoever picks it up to be able to just look at everything. But number two reason, because that's probably more likely than that you're gonna be dealing with a search incident to arrest. But the number two reason is that some courts, generally, this is a situation where the Supreme Court hasn't made a decision yet, but many courts, in most areas, you're gonna be covered by the rule that your password itself is actually covered under the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. So if law enforcement has arrested you and they have taken your phone, they can't force you to give them your password. So it's great if you have some sort of passphrase to get into your phone. It's even better if the contents of your phone are encrypted. So you don't have to, just in any regular search, you don't have to help law enforcement while they are conducting a search. This is for your phone. It's, you know, if they're in your house. So this also applies to your passphrase itself. They cannot force you to give them your passphrase except for in limited circumstances. Give me a second.
Okay.
So for instance, there are situations where, you know, and this is going beyond an initial encounter with law enforcement, if there's a grand jury that is convened in case to decide to indict somebody, then there are some situations in which they could get your password, but it is a pretty limited circumstance and certainly not in the sort of initial encounter. I think that's very, very important to know, because you now have a couple of layers of protection. You have the protection of, at the very least, when they first arrest you, they're gonna need to get a warrant, and then you have the protection of if you have put a passphrase on your phone and you have encrypted the contents, they're gonna have a really hard time. And I'm saying phone, this of course applies to any electronic device. Go ahead.
If I remember rightly, it only applies to memory things, but not biometric locks like fingerprints
right.
and face recognition stuff.
That's so. Right. That's a really good point. We actually, EFF recommends that you don't use the fingerprint unlock on your phone, because this rule does not apply to that. It's not, you're not incriminating yourself by saying, or by them forcing you to give a thumbprint. And that is something that there's been some case law around people having to give, do breathalyzers or give blood samples when they're arrested, and that has been upheld, that practice has been upheld. So don't use a thumbprint, don't use an iris scan. You wanna have an actual number that you have on your phone.
And let me just add, if you're using the diagram method, 8 points and clean your screen. I can't believe how many of my friends' phones I've looked at where I could mm-hmm. guess theirs just by the grease.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually, EFF usually says just use a number, not a pattern, partly because of that issue.
So even if they have a warrant, they still can't force you to give your password?
That's right, because your password is, that's what's covered under the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. So yes, even if they have a warrant. There are situations, as I said, more specific situations in an investigation when they could do that, or when they certainly would be trying to bargain with somebody to get their password, but they can't force you to say something. Go ahead.
Let me step back on a few levels on this. Remember that what we're talking about here is not ways to keep you from being arrested. The focus here is on keeping you from being convicted. Every level defense you put up gives your lawyer some other way to get the case thrown out, you found innocent, etc. But a more important concern, and we'll talk about this tonight, is we don't want you getting shot. So if the cop asks for your phone, we never recommend resisting. Definitely don't play keep away with the phone. Another reason you want it locked. It's a lot easier to just hand them the phone and shut up and figure they can't, that the, your average cop's not going to be able to guess your password at that time.
So I don't see any hands, so maybe I will, come up here to the front, and then maybe I'll give a brief rundown about what to do if they're actually at your door.
I was kind of curious. I was unaware of the California case, but if they have a warrant and they have access to your phone, can they log into like VPNs and search like remote networks or accounts on other systems like Facebook or?
All depends on the scope of the warrant.
Yeah.
And you can make the same go ahead.
I was just going to say, on top of that, if they know what they're doing, it's very likely they will, whether they're going to use that evidence or not. It gives them another way to go find evidence they want. Again, more reasons to protect everything and to make sure your lawyer's aware of it to again, get these things thrown out later on. How did they get this data, et cetera, beyond the scope of the warrant?
Just with all the, like I've seen services now where there's an app on your phone to like for remote surveillance systems and remote networks and all this other stuff. I'm like, you could search, you know, someone's house just by looking at their phone at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't want to have those systems installed on your phone, and that's definitely one of them. Did you have more to... go ahead.
I just had a quick question, maybe comment. Recently here in Georgia, there was a case over on the other side of town where the police were disguised as construction workers. People were stopped at red lights. They would look in their cars and see them texting, whatever, and issued a ticket. So I guess that opens up a whole other can of worms. They could be posing as, you know, panhandlers. Just, I mean, what's the limit on what they're allowed to?
There are very, very few limits on what they're allowed to do. Police are allowed to lie to you during an investigation.
Yep.
I mean, that is how... I mean, when you hear about the FBI busting terrorism cases, the vast majority of what they're actually doing is using informants to go find people who have serious mental health issues and lying to them and convincing them that they need to get involved in some sort of bomb threat or something like that. I mean, it's pretty horrendous what they do.
Yeah, again, there are very few limits to what the police can and will do. So again, it is your job to set up defenses for yourself. And being arrested can ruin your weekend, your week, your month. Being convicted will ruin your life. So go for the various levels of harm.
So I did want to, before we get to your question, I wanted to just touch on another piece of information I think is useful about once they're already in your phone. So I think I'll talk about warrants a little bit more in detail, but warrants are really supposed to be specific. They're supposed to name the specific thing that law enforcement is looking for and name the specific place where they can search. That being said, there's something known as the plain view exception to that rule. So if they see something in plain sight that is illegal, then that they can make an argument is illegal. They can investigate that further. So if they see something on your phone that they have some argument is illegal or something on your computer, then they could actually, you know, click on something, look further, even if it's outside the scope of their warrant. And the scope of the warrant becomes a huge issue in criminal cases. So that's just something to keep in mind. There are exceptions to exactly what they can do with the warrant.
And to piggyback on that for a second, do keep your phones relatively clean in any case. I mentioned this at BDSM events and the like. If you're into age play, those photos do not go on your phone. Keep those separate, whether the activities were legal or not. If they give a police officer a reason to say they had a reasonable suspicion, they can dig deeper, and you don't want to set up that situation.
I was wondering if there's any kind of with phones getting taken without consent in a lot of cases when people are filming, is there any form of like app where there's sort of a panic button where you could call another people who would be on the app to film what's going on in case your phone gets taken?
I like the ACLU app where if you're filming, it'll immediately upload it.
Okay.
That's been one I've been very impressed with. What you're talking about, I'm not aware of, so go make it and make some money.
So Maybe I'll just say a few words about what to do if law enforcement actually shows up at your door. So different people will say different things about whether you should stand at your door and talk to them or whether you should actually step outside and close the door behind you to talk to them, if you're going to talk to them at all. I will leave that up to you. But the most important thing to do is do not open your door wide open. Really, the thing that I recommend is just don't get in a conversation with them at all. You know, if they come to your door and they want to chat with you or whatever, you can open your door and say, do you have a warrant? No, I don't want to speak with you. If you want to continue speaking with me, I want an attorney present. So. So if you do that and they come in anyway, do you want to repeat the question into the, no, okay. So the question was, what if you do that and they come in anyway? Are you saying with or without a warrant? Without a warrant. Once they've come in, if you've said that and they come in anyway without a warrant, any evidence that they get is going to be thrown out of a court. It's just not going to be, again, they can try to make up some sort of reason why. So the exceptions, the common exceptions that you'll see to the warrant requirement are really hot pursuit. So that's like they are chasing somebody through the streets and they run into their house. There's also exigent. Actually, do you want to?
Imminent danger.
Exigent circumstances are basically if there's an emergency, just to kind of put it in common sense terms. So if there's an emergency, someone's going to be injured, or they're flushing drugs down the toilet or something, and the cop can see them doing it, then that would satisfy that. That's an exception to the warrant requirement. So
okay. I had a situation where the police came to question a housemate of mine. He was outside talking to them about an incident that happened a couple weeks earlier. And they decided then that they wanted to search his room and come through my house. And
did he give permission?
He said they could search the room.
That's
screwed
consent
at that point.
Yeah.
But they
the whole house is up for
look.
The whole house isn't exactly up for grabs. Yeah.
Because the lease was only for the room.
Yeah.
And I had told it specifically said he is not allowed to invite anyone in without my permission, too.
So
that was more to apply to people that he would have over, not the cops, but I did have that specifically in the lease.
Yeah. So that's a situation. So this is a pretty common situation, and it's a really unfortunate one. There's actually been some bad court decisions recently about who can consent to a search. So it used to be that if there are two people standing in front of law enforcement and the officers reasonably believe that both of them live there, one person can say, I do not consent to a search of my home, do not enter my home, and law enforcement would have to abide by that. That is not the case anymore. So the rules around who can consent are a little bit fuzzy, but there's some precedent for law enforcement to say, well, I wasn't certain who actually had control over this home. One of the people said yes, one of them said no. That can actually be valid consent. Yeah. And that decision came out of a domestic violence situation where law enforcement was dealing with people who, and so I understand how that decision got made, right? It makes sense in that context. You know, if you are a domestic violence survivor and you're standing outside with your partner and they're saying, no, you can't search, and you want that person to get arrested. So I understand why they came up with that decision, but unfortunately it affects the rest of us.
Well, they told him that if he didn't open the door for them, they would have a SWAT team come and knock it down.
That's right. That's exactly one of the things that law enforcement does. This is how they get consent. They get consent because they scare people into getting consent. I do some work with the Muslim community in the Bay Area, and they're a big fan of saying, you know, you could talk to us. The FBI shows up at people's doors and say, you could talk to us. If you don't want to talk to us, I mean, I guess we could talk to your cousin. How's their visa application going? You know, is it going pretty well? Yeah, maybe we'll go have a conversation with them. Oh, maybe we'll go talk to your mom. You know, I'm sure your mom would be interested in knowing what sort of things you've been up to. I mean, they will use all sorts of intimidation.
There's a fine line between, or there's a gray area and a fine line, I guess, between like outright threats versus simple lies and how it's done. And there's a lot of case law out there. And so the best thing for you would be just to make it clear you don't consent, try to assert your rights, but don't resist anything that they do. Don't fight them physically or anything like that. And then make sure your attorney knows of all those facts.
And so remember that if the police have to ask, they don't have cause. Just as a rule of thumb, as soon as a cop asks, they don't have the right to come in. They know they don't have the right, and they're wanting you to give up your rights at that point. And at this point, it's just your ability to prevent an affirmative defense later on for Blair to take care of and get you out of it down the line.
So as property owner, if any of my tenants...
The way that Georgia police have told me they handle this, if they are told that if they can reasonably believe that whoever is telling them they have permission has the right to give them permission, then they can go on in and search.
Yep.
Even if I state that I'm the property owner.
As long as they can. I mean, if it's somebody who is living 20 miles away says, yeah, go search your house, that's a much harder one for them to do.
And that kind of goes back to there's a good faith exception. So I believe it was in the 11th Circuit case that was reversed, well, en banc, all the judges at once. But the first case that went up to appeal here in Georgia, they said that the search was unconstitutional. This was regarding, I believe, cell phone tracking location. But nonetheless, the evidence was admissible. So the exclusionary rule that we discussed did not apply because the officers had a good faith basis to believe what they were doing was unconstitutional. So like when it happened, it was unconstitutional. But at the time, the officers thought in good faith what they were doing was constitutional. So they got away with it.
And the police...
That's a good faith exception. So that basically that person who... That guy who's in jail or a woman or whoever went up to the court system, they established a good rule that was unconstitutional, but in their specific instance, they're in jail still.
And police will take the broadest scope of an invitation that they possibly can, and it's up to you then to get it thrown out later on. So they will come in and... Yes, officially the whole house may not be, but they will act like the whole house is up for grabs at that point.
And one more
stuff for you to continue affirmatively presenting your defense.
One more thing I'd like to add is that when they're coming to the door to your residence, it's different than if they're coming to your vehicle door. So if they're coming to your vehicle door, at least in Georgia, they have a right to tell you to get out, and even if this is for a simple traffic violation.
Yep.
And don't, I've seen this, I saw these videos on YouTube or wherever, right? People stick something on their window saying, I do not consent, or whatever, and they just sit in their car like this. And that is a fundamental misunderstanding, at least of Georgia law. And you're going to basically go to jail if you do that. So, but you can still assert your rights if they require you to get out of the car for just a registration tag or whatever. You know, rights remain silent or whatever. And so I just wanted to add that.
And we'll go over some of these tonight, too.
Okay.
Right.
It just really sounds like the police can just do anything and ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Yep. No, that is actually, it's unfortunate, but that is exactly how it works. And some police departments are a little bit better at following the Constitution, and some are worse. And they continue to get away with it, so this is why they do it. So I did want to just say a few words about warrants, and just for questions, I saw a hand right back there, and I saw another hand back there. But before we get to you, I just wanted to say, with regards to warrants, if they do show up at your door and they do have a warrant, you should ask to see the warrant. And you should, the things that a warrant should have are the correct name of the person arrested or the correct address of the specific place to be searched, a list of items that can be seized, and a judge's signature. And it should also have a deadline by which it needs to be executed. So a lot of times, it is impressive how often you see cases that got thrown out because the address was wrong, or because the name was wrong, or because one small thing was wrong. So that's another thing to look at. And of course, as you said, completely right, they kind of do what they want and ask for forgiveness later. They will not get forgiveness if, you know, you were standing at the door and you said, this is the wrong address. You know, why you can't search here. They might go ahead and do it anyway, but you made the objection. So it's good to preserve your objections like that as much as possible without having don't have a conversation with them about anything other than how you are asserting your rights, because anything you say really can and will be used against you.
About a year or so ago, I saw a news story about the Michigan State Police. The claim was made that they were demanding people's phones during routine traffic stops, and then plugging a device in to clone the phones. Mm-hmm. Does that work on the most modern phones, or were those more likely older phones that were allowing that type of thing to happen?
Technologically?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it had to be unlocked before it could be cloned or...
Nope. Now whether or not they can get into the... So if you have an iPhone, if you have the most recent iPhone and you have a passphrase on your phone is encrypted, whether or not you set it up that way. And that's a great thing. If you have an Android, you should encrypt your phone now. So they can still clone it, but then if your data is encrypted, your data is encrypted. So that's good. I would love to do it in the order that folks raise their hands. So I don't know your name, but the woman back there, and then there was a gentleman in the back with the green shirt. So if we could go in that order, and then I have a hand up in the front here.
I just wanted to know on the warrants, when they come to your door, it's for a roommate at your place. And like it's at nighttime and everything, and they say, if you don't open the door, we're going to break your door down, even after you've told them, just give me a minute so you can put a house coat on or something because you were in bed, they woke you up. Do they have the right to break your door down for somebody else in your house?
I don't think so. I would argue that they wouldn't, but again, you'd have to, that'd be one of those kind of gray areas depending on the situation.
But you don't have to let them in. You can open the door and say, the other person go out. That they're after.
Well, if they have a warrant, it depends on whether
it's
a warrant to arrest or a warrant.
If they have
search.
A warrant, you said?
Yeah, they had a warrant.
To search or to arrest?
Arrest.
Okay.
Yeah, so if they have a warrant to arrest, you can ask them to do that. Anytime they have a warrant, they're supposed to follow something called the knock and announce rule, unless there's some sort of exception where they think people are going to be destroying evidence in between the time they knock. And announce that they are. So they're supposed to knock and say, this is the police, we're executing a warrant, and they are supposed to give you time to open the door and talk to them.
Unless there's exigent circumstances.
Unless there's exigent circumstances. So, if they're showing up to execute a warrant to try to find drugs, that's like the most common exception is that, they say, oh, somebody's going to flush all these drugs down
right.
the toilet.
It wasn't for anything like that.
The other things they'll say are imminent flight risk and imminent danger.
Okay.
Or the warrant itself may be a no-knock warrant. So.
Yeah.
But then they wouldn't have knocked in the first place for. They'd come in and shot the dog already.
I wanted to address the person who was talking about renters in the house. I have a lot of properties that I operate in Florida, and Florida, of course, is another beast in terms of law. But I think you're creating a real gray area when you exchange money for a room or goods of any kind. Becomes a Fourth Amendment sort of domicile at that point. There's a lot of laws that apply to those renters, even if you own the premises that they're living in, because it's considered their residence. So, a lot of it's one of the gray areas. If you have six different people living in a house, and only one of those people owns the house, the other five pay rent to that individual, each of those people individually have rights within that house to their room, domicile, whatever it is. And so if they give consent, common areas are kind of fair game, especially if the officer walks through the house to get to their room, anything they see in that area can be subject to the plain sight rule that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I just wanted to offer a brief bit of advice on the Cellbrite question that was up there earlier, the device you're talking about. The technology on that is updated every year. Those devices are given out free of charge in many cases by the FBI to local law enforcement. And it's a joint operation between NSA and FBI that develops that technology, plus a third-party contractor. So the answer to your question, yeah, they can break most modern phones the day those phones come out. So,
although not if your phone is encrypted,
right?
So this is yet another reason to encrypt your phone. We've heard some pretty amazing statements from law enforcement recently. If you want to, you can hand the box over while I'm talking. We've heard some pretty amazing statements from law enforcement recently about how bad, how frustrated they are by encryption to the point where. The Manhattan DA is sitting in front of Congress and saying, he said they dealt with 78 iPhones that they were not able to access the data on because it was encrypted. So we know at least that is working as intended.
Did that O'Reilly versus California decision apply to seizures? I mean, can they just take your phone? Can this Michigan case where they're basically cloning your phone, I mean, I view that as a seizure. I mean, what kind of, I mean, are there any rules in place against that? Any? Well,
so when you're arrested, they take your property, and that is covered under a, I mean, they'll take it, and they can take it to catalog it. That doesn't, and it doesn't count as a seizure outside of the arrest. So it is about the access itself. And this is, again, another reason why, you know, have passphrase on your phone and have it encrypted. And actually, and same goes for your computer. I mean, you should be using full disk encryption on your computer as well. And if you're wondering how to do any of these things, you can go to ssd.eff.org, and we explain how to encrypt your phone or your hard drive. Yeah, there was another question right here. And then the person in the front. I'm sorry, you would raise your hand earlier. No, you go ahead. We have plenty of time for both of you. Yeah.
On the phone encryption, without saying what I do, I talk to a lot of young people and to parents, and they're getting phones for their children, and they don't ask about security on cell phones. It looks pretty. Oh, I can do this. And how do you get young people to understand what they can and cannot do? Because now that you have the cloud technology, the technology is moving faster than we can really think about it. And it's not so hard to hack the cloud. And you're talking about encrypting data. There are several different types of encryption. So depending on if you have an iPhone or an Android, nobody walks into AT&T and Sprint and goes, what encryption are you using? Are you using 64-bit? Are you using 128-bit or 2054? Nobody's doing that. And they're constantly trying to figure out how to break that. And we're constantly trying to come up with new, but we can't come up with new encryptions as fast as people are breaking them.
Yeah, no, it seems like every couple of weeks we learn about a different vulnerability in a system that is being used in a widespread way. That being said, at least again with I don't have an iPhone because I'm uncomfortable for a variety of reasons with purchasing one. That being said, when I say that, as far as we know, the encryption on iPhones is quite strong, you know, it's because law enforcement is complaining about it.
Okay.
Law enforcement is complaining about a technology. It's like, you know, the NSA complaining about people sending encrypted emails. They're still complaining about it. So that makes me feel a little bit better about the technology itself. That being said, I think you asked a really important question about just the way that people are thinking about security, and younger people are thinking about security. And I think if you're having that conversation with somebody, there is just a case this week where a 17-year-old boy is being charged with possessing child pornography for having naked pictures of himself.
Of himself?
He's being charged as an adult of himself. That's right. We get requests all the time into our intake about, you know, kids who, like, whatever you might think about sexting, right? Like, it's kids, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, like, that's, you're gonna do things like that. It's not smart. We know it's gonna happen, and it doesn't even have to be the most racy thing. I mean, it could be, you know, a picture of somebody's butt, and under some state laws, that's enough. So I think if nothing else will convince people, pointing out, hey, you know, really bad things are happening to kids who are doing these things with their phones, you should probably figure out how to be a little bit safer about that.
Right,
you know?
Because they're, well, the kids I know are using Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook, and they're constantly taking pictures of them.
Yep.
Lord help me from my godchildren. But,
I think that's what teenagers do.
That's what they do. So, but, yeah, that case sounds very interesting. If you're taking a picture yourself, only because they're underage, because people are taking pictures of themselves all over the place and posting them everywhere. So being he's underage is much different than if he were 18 or 21.
Yeah, the second, you know, anybody 18 or under, there's all sorts of laws that apply to intimate photos.
And I would say, just as a parent, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I mean, if you are a parent, be aware of the technology that your kids are using. You know, like, there's a scandal where a bunch of celebrities had uploaded their racy photos to the internet, or to the cloud service through Apple, I guess, and that got hacked, and they got distributed all over the internet. So, you know, similar to, you know, watching what your children do on the computer, having programs set up. But it's amazing to me, because I was the last person in my family to get a cell phone.
Don't spy on your kids.
Don't spy on your kids.
Please don't spy on your kids.
Okay. That's a gray area fine line there. I mean, spying on your kids and parenting, I guess. So, you know.
We see most parents are really concerned about their kids' privacy and security online, or at least I do. I mean, this is the whole reason we have COPPA for online child protection. The kids' stuff is not supposed to be up there in most cases, and you've got to follow COPPA if you're collecting kids' data. So I think most parents have that concern. It just maybe doesn't bubble to the surface often enough. Why we do these kind of seminars is make people aware of how to do it and why to do it. Tonight goes into it all over again. So I think for most, if they were aware of it and if the information was readily available, parents would really want to have it for the children. I'll admit, many parents would want a back door for themselves, and we know the danger as soon as you give anybody a back door. But I think most parents would really want that security for their kids' devices.
And maybe not spying per se is not what I'm trying to describe. But I'm trying to maybe, you know, looking at the technology and kind of what it's capable of, and then selecting what your child can have. Because, you know, knowing how kids are, you know, we're not saying going through and read every single text message that they're doing, but if there is an ability to disable a cloud option or something, or if you want to limit some feature, then go ahead and do that. That's slightly different, I think. But
yeah, I'm referring more to these things like Life 360, these apps that you can install on your kids' phones that use the GPS tracker to tell you when your child arrives at school and when your child arrives at their friend's house and, you know, when they go to the bowling alley and when they leave. I mean, that's just super creepy. Like, that's not, I can't imagine the kind of trust breach that might be there to be using one of those apps. But also, when you start collecting that data, somebody else has that data about your kids. And I don't know about you, but I don't trust any company that's out there today to hold that kind of information. I mean, it's we are seeing, as Blair mentioned, right, there's breaches left and right. The idea of a company like Life 360 having all its data that it's been tracking these kids being breached is very disturbing.
And I've got to admit, I've got the opposite paranoia. I've got a 3-month-old, and my phone is lousy with pictures of her right now, but I'm making sure that not a single one of them could be misconstrued in any way, shape, or form.
Go ahead. Thank you for waiting. Sorry, we went off on a tangent there.
No, it's perfectly acceptable. Actually, you already addressed my original question as far as like how law enforcement's responding to encryption on phones as its effectiveness. I was curious because I know like on Android phones you can do system-wide encryption. iPhones, you don't actually have the option to like manually turn it on, where, you know, before boot you have to actually input a password. So I was wondering if you could give me a little bit more background on that. Apparently it is actually working. As you say, they're complaining about it, but do you have any more
iPhone encryption? And I don't know, I have heard nothing from law enforcement about dealing with Android encryption. And I think it's really just because the reason that they're complaining about iPhone encryption is because it's default now. So with iPhones, you actually have to, you know, you don't have to do anything. All you have to do, as you said, is have the passphrase. And I mean, most people, even people with pretty good security practice, are still not turning on encryption on their Android. I haven't heard how they're feeling about it, although I'm sure that they would happily complain about that as well.
And another comment I'd like to put towards that, full disk encryption is also kind of a pain to do in the first place. Like, once you've started using your computer and stuff, like, it can take a couple days to do something like that.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you guys have, like, as far as tools-wise, that makes it more, you know, user-friendly? You know, it's not going to take 3 days to do it. It can do it in the background. I mean, it's not a very friendly process, and most of the time it's kind of awkward. Like, you have to do all this technical stuff. So is there any actually like user-friendly software out there, like for your common everyday Joe to use for their laptop or their kid's computer or something like that? Do you have any suggestions?
I don't. Do you? No. So yeah, I mean, so you're making a really good point, which is especially with either your phone or your laptop, when you go to, if you don't have those things full disk encrypted now, when you go to do it, it's gonna take a long time. I haven't had it take like a couple of days with a computer, but I've had it take several hours. So you need to set aside several hours where you don't need your phone or you don't need your computer, and you can let it do that, and it needs to be plugged in. I don't think that it's necessarily incredibly confusing to do, but I think it just does take a long time.
And let me reiterate again that there is an important part of physical security in this as well. Your home computer is a safer place than your phone or your laptop. A hard drive separated from your home computer is a safer place than that. Just keep building up these layers of defense. They come with a warrant for your home computer. That doesn't cover hard drives unless they said all memory devices or something like that. So remember, physical security is a part of your electronic security.
And I know I've mentioned SST a few times. There is actually a guide to encryption. So, you can go through it, and definitely if you have questions.
All good things take work.
Yeah.
I had two separate questions. The first one was that, let's say that not like I have people sending me these type of pictures, but let's say that I did have somebody that was like 17 years old and they sent me a risque photo, or that you had somebody that would regularly send you things. Like, how does that work as far as, because I can't stop them from sending me things, but that doesn't inherently mean that I want them or that, where does that fall into things?
Entire court cases are made on that question. The best thing you can do is create
layers of defense.
Say, like, you should, if you ever get a picture that you did not solicit, you should respond immediately and say, I did not ask for this picture and I'm deleting it now, and you should keep that text message.
Yeah, so part of every crime, or virtually every crime, is an intent element. So there has to be some sort of mens rea, is what they call it. You've probably heard that from Legally Blonde or elsewhere, I don't know. But there's an intent requirement. So if someone just sends you something, you didn't intend to receive it, you didn't ask them for it, but you should delete it immediately. Otherwise, there's some statutes for just possessing something. Yeah. So at a certain point, there's going to be a sort of imputed consent or knowledge that you're keeping something that's illegal. So definitely that's good advice, destroying it and sending a message back immediately if it's something like that.
And unfortunately, the drug war has set too many negative precedents for this. There's you buy a car, there's a roach in the back seat, you get busted, you're in possession, that sort of thing. So it is up to us to safeguard both our physical properties and our electronic devices.
And this is also another reason why you don't want to be, you should think twice before having everything automatically backed up, synced to the cloud, because that's another whole other set of pictures or whatever that you're going to have to deal with.
Well, that, and then another issue that these cases focus on is called the third-party doctrine, which is the constitutional doctrine that basically says once you voluntarily give another company this information, you're kind of waiving any constitutional protections to it. So by giving it to someone else, you're losing your right to assert that it was unlawfully searched and seized. So that opens up a whole other can of worms as far as like cloud computing and iCloud and all that. So.
And this goes back to what Nadia said before. Shut up and never give consent, because you might not know what's on that device. Talking to the police, as a general rule, cannot help you and can only hurt you.
Okay. My second question was, I'm in medical school, and in order for us to be able to receive school emails and things related, because we may receive confidential patient information, we have to have our phone encrypted. But let's say that there was a situation in which there was a warrant or something like that where they did have the ability to search your phone. How does that really overlap as far as patient confidentiality is concerned and things like that, where they can search your phone, but at the same time there's a potential for that private information to be disseminated?
That would be something that your attorney would have to address. Seriously,
it's
very...
Probably never happened. It was just right. More of a curiosity thing.
But the warrant should be specific enough, and it has to be tailored in that your attorney would have to answer, this information is privileged, it's not relevant to the case, it should not be encompassed by the warrant, and et cetera. So.
And that would be covered probably under HIPAA. But that being said, that's why they're... I'm really excited to hear that they're doing that, because this is not something that happened in law school and with lawyers. They're never taught how to use encryption and never taught to do anything like that. But again, if it is... your phone has been encrypted, it's going to be really, really hard for them to get the data. So it's a pretty unlikely circumstance in which that would happen.
And just to go back to the the drug war precedents, there have been cases where the police were allowed to go through doctors' records. So,
how about an issue that once the police or whoever has your phone, and say they get into like the first thing, and they get into Facebook, Instagram, whatever, Snapchat, and they're trying to tell you to come put the password in so they can access your Facebook account, Snapchat, whichever account they want to go look at.
Yep, it's not just your passwords for your device. Any passwords, you can say, I'm going to remain silent, want to speak to an attorney, and you can always assert that they cannot force you to give them a password because that's protected by the Fifth Amendment protection against self-incrimination. So it's that goes for all passwords. And again, usually how this happens is not that they... it's not that they force somebody to do it. It's that they say, you know, if you just give us your passwords, we won't file this charge. You know, we'll do this, we'll do that. That's how that ends up happening. Or they convince people that they have to, but you don't have to.
As always, if they ask for permission, they don't have it.
Anything? Yeah, you were next.
Dragon?
Yep.
Two comments. First, about the medical stuff, and you guys can correct me on this. I work in medicine. There are two laws. There's the HIPAA Act, which was really designed for paper records. But there's also a new law that's called the High Tech Act, and that's about dealing with medicine and electronics. And ironically, the stuff in the High Tech Act contradicts stuff that's in the HIPAA Act. And there are now new requirements for your doctor's offices that the Centers of Medicaid and Medicare require you to do to get paid appropriately that are actually putting you at risk for really violating HIPAA if you successfully do it.
Oh God.
There's a conflict of the electronics versus what we can do. And if I tell you guys anything, is like be careful with your medical data on your phones.
Oh, yeah.
Because HIPAA, that's a gray area. And if police can get access, like we're required in medicine to say, I need you to come online and do this because I'm not going to get points and I'm not going to get paid in 2 years. But if it's on your phone and you've got a nice little medical app, and there's, you can click on it and you can see what your labs are, but you might also see that I wrote something in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the police get access to that. That's a whole other very dangerous thing. So really protect your medical information because it can be very incriminatory. And the laws about it on your phone are different than your HIPAA laws. It's such a gray, dangerous area. My question for you guys is, this sounds really hypocritical, but how do you help police when there's like a dirt bag dealing electronic issues and you want to hand over evidence and you want to help, but at the same time, you really don't want them to catch you not paying taxes on your Amazon order. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
you know.
Hypothetically, EFF, right? And also in my non-EFF life, we don't generally tell people how to help the police. I mean, it's a good question, but maybe if
the day, to have freedom to these freedoms that we exercise, we have to accept that people will.
When you have freedom, you have to accept that people will inherently abuse it. So we're basically making the desire that it's better for there to be individuals who abuse it than the government to be able to abuse us as a whole.
And
I mean, it's pretty straightforward, at least for me, in that regard.
One of the things we bring up in the 10 Rules of Dealing with Police Encounters is the fact that there are times most of us want the police to be on our side. If something happens, there are legitimate reasons to call the police, talk to the police, deal with the police, provide the police evidence. Domestic abuse is a key one that we get in those discussions. So that comes down to your judgment and, more importantly, your discussions with Blair when you retain him.
I just wanted to mention real quickly regarding your question. I think you would have the consent to specify very narrowly, if you want to help the police, very narrowly what you would allow them access to. And maybe they could have a forensic expert, but, you know, you're in control of that point in time. They're not, just because you give them access to one portion, one piece of information doesn't mean that they can just rummage through your entire hard drive, for example.
Get yourself a Blair and have Blair give it to the police.
Yeah, I mean,
make sure if you're concerned seriously, I would speak with an attorney if there's a serious thing where you want to help the police or something, but you don't want them doing anything other than a specific thing, then yeah, talk with an attorney.
But again, once you have consented to a search, you have kind of let the cat out of the bag, and I would not trust that law enforcement is going to stay to a specific area of your computer or anything like that, especially with, as I mentioned, the plain view rule. Law enforcement will use that to make all sorts of excuses about what they can look at. And then if they get evidence and it's not actually within the exception of the plain view, or when it's not actually in the plain view exception, they can do a whole thing where they say, well, we would have gotten the, this is really sad that I forgot the name of the rule. But they can say, you know, we would have gotten this evidence. Oh, it's the inevitability exception. They can say we would have gotten this evidence anyway, some other way, and so we're still going to use it. It is kind of playing with fire, especially if you have anything yourself to be concerned about, which, believe me, almost everybody here does. Like, you've speeded, you haven't paid your taxes correctly in many states that still have archaic laws.
And it's not even if you broke a law. It's if they will suspect it. If it's a picture of an 18-year-old's butt, you're at risk. You don't have to have broken a law for the police to use that evidence against you. Again, you want to protect yourself as best you can. Only give what's required. Go through someone like Blair Fort. And
I would say don't just go through an attorney. I mean, you should actually talk to a technologist and somebody who, if you were going to do anything with a device, an attorney's great. An attorney who knows how computers work is even better.
Or works with an expert.
Or who works with an expert. Yeah, so just make sure you're getting that kind of advice if that was something that you wanted to do. So we have 4 minutes left, I would love for somebody who I
have
a bunch
two issues.
Of hands up.
I've got two things I would like to touch on that we didn't go over yet. The first one is borders. We get this question a lot in the other one. Laptops can be taken to the border. You do not have to give your password there unless someone has heard a ruling that I haven't. And again, they'll threaten all kinds of nasty things, what they'll do to your computer, and you won't get it back for 5 years or whatever. But when you go to the border, you have surrendered most of your rights about being searched. Police can search you and your property at that point without a warrant. So be aware of that. That's including phones. That's everything at this stage. But how much you have to help has not been decided, and I would refer to the Fourth Amendment. I don't have to say anything. You don't have to say anything to walk through a metal detector, so that's permissible. Second thing is private property, and I've heard this happen at events before, where in order to get access to a location, they want access to your device. And anytime a private location wants to search you, you have to have the ability to leave rather than consent to the search. So always keep that in mind. If your entry onto the property is requires you to give up access to your phone, make sure you can leave instead of doing that.
And I will say thank you for touching on the board. That we didn't go over that at all, and that's usually part of one of the things I talk about. EFF has a whole border search guide, especially if you're a frequent traveler. I strongly recommend reading it. And the TSA kind of changes what they do when you're going through checkpoints on a pretty regular basis. For a while, they were making everybody take their laptops out and turn them on. So just read the guide.
And there's a panel on encryption as well tomorrow if you're interested in that specific issue.
Yeah. So, I think we have time for one last question, and you haven't gotten to ask a question yet, so please.
Okay. So I work at a law office, and if we want to have email on our phone, we have to have a passcode. But the company also has the ability to wipe your phone completely. Yeah. So I kind of wanted to know your thoughts on that. The reason we have that, and you can wipe your own phone also through an app. Mm-hmm. And the reason we have that is, like, if an employee leaves and they haven't surrendered their phone to get that email taken off, we can wipe their entire phone, which I find a little terrifying.
That's pretty terrifying.
This is a personal phone and not a corporate phone.
Yes, this is a personal phone.
They should just be giving you guys corporate phones. They're going to require that kind of security.
And that was kind of my suggestion, but we have not implemented that yet.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to know your thoughts on the fact that they have the ability to do that, and do you have any right, or have you surrendered your right the second that you have consented to having the email on your phone?
So this is an employment question and not a law enforcement question. I think that it's certainly very concerning, and I would say maybe the one thing you might suggest to them, like, it should just be company phones.
I think there's a bigger question here of attorney-client privilege to begin with, because the physical security of the records in the law office can be protected. Mm-hmm. They've got no way of knowing once you're off site who else has access to your phone. And so I would worry on a more general level about that, especially if it is your phone and not a corporate phone. Larry, you got any thoughts on that?
I don't think, like, the key determinant of, like, whether the attorney-client privilege protects something is whether that person who has the information was given it for kind of a reason, because they need it, because they're the paralegal working on the case or whatever. But if, like, a firm just leaves all their phones wide open and lets anyone in the firm access it without, you know, whatsoever, then that's, you know, that just hurting the client. It's unethical as well. So, I mean, there's got to be a lot of precautions, technology precautions and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But, like, I agree totally, you should not use your personal phone for business unless your employer, you know, mandates it.
I find that
then it's easy. You have to, because
I think it would be worth looking into the how exactly they're doing it, because there could be, I mean, you could actually make some sort of security argument based on the service itself. Mm-hmm. So I think if I were you, that's probably the next thing I would do, is try to find somebody who has good technical background to actually look at what service they're using, and you might be able to make some of those points about how it would be better to do something different.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think we are at time, unfortunately.
If you have more of these questions, feel free to come to 10 o'clock tonight, 10 Rules of Dealing with Police Encounters. Remember, it's 10 at 10 in this room. In this room, right?
And if I didn't get to your question, stop by the EFF
table
if you want to ask me.
Thank you.